The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So there's only one place to start, Brian. Leash, 4.22. Offaly, less than 4.22.
Yeah, bad day at the office. Cracker by all accounts. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. I was on RT duty in Kilkenny in Dublin, but... Yeah, by all accounts, it was end-to-end stuff. Leash also deserved the victory from what I've heard from the majority of Offaly supporters, to be fair. Much more in control of the game and could have been out of sight by half-time. But they left Offaly in the game for long periods, and I suppose it would have been a little bit unfair if Offaly had a snuck it at the end. But look, that's hurling, that's the joys of it. But look, high scoring, huge entertaining, 10-euro win, massive value for anyone that was there. But... I suppose the other side of it, while the tie scoring, it also asks the questions, like, you know, how much were defences in control from that perspective as well.
Yeah, but it was a roller coaster game, and I wasn't at it either. I had to work on Saturday night, didn't even see Dublin and Kilkenny. But Leash went 5 up, got pegged back, then they went 6 up and got pegged back, and Offaly went up, and then Leash had to fight back again. Like, I mean, so I can only imagine. Heard there was a decent crowd at it, maybe 4,000 or 5,000, and just a fantastic for Leash people to go to O'Connor Park in the Championship and beat Offaly. It's a massive result. What I'm really disappointed about is that there was no recognition for this result at all, right? So I want to talk to you, JJ, about this, because Brian is RT employee now, so he might be a little bit compromised. So no, but seriously, because I'm really pissed off about this, because I'm from Leash and this was a great result. I couldn't get to the game. I saw not a dicky bird of this. Yeah, I saw nothing. They didn't even read out the result on the RT news on Saturday night. Then last night, inexplicably, they didn't even mention it. Now, for me to understand this, is Leash would be in around 11th maybe team in the country, and Offaly 12th based on yesterday's result. This is the tier 2 hurling competition. Now, you can say that anything below the Joe McDonagh Cup, there are football counties playing hurling, you know, and there's not much interest even in the counties involved, and, you know, they're trying to keep hurling alive. But Antrim, Offaly, Leash are hurling counties.
This is not
bullshit. This is hurling counties that are in a tier 2 and are trying to get out of it and get back into Leinster Championship, and they're giving it no highlights at all. How are the GAA standing for RTE completely disregarding a tier 2, and then you have Joe Brawley on the football analysis talking about a tier 2 in football.
Exactly what I was going to say, you know, tier 2 in football.
But that's what's scaring the football people, because look at the hurling. Or is this just a hurling thing where there's nothing outside the top, the good counties?
I'd say they're just giving them an excuse not to, like, take the tier 2 in the football. This is giving the football counties a huge excuse not to actually go down that road because of what publicity they're going to get over to. Leash and Offaly, like, hurling needs these two counties going, and it was a cracker of a game, you know.
That's just all rhetoric, though. Do they need it? Where's
you
the?
Do where, need, of course, no, and need, I do.
I agree. But where's the proof? Is in the pudding.
I
know what I mean?
Well, like, yeah, and it was a fabulous scoring game as well. Like, there was plenty of highlights in that particular game as well. Like, obviously, there was no camera set up at the game, so they couldn't show it or anything. But look, every camera can't be at every game, but a bit of recognition. Eddie Brennan is obviously on the Sunday game as well. He'd be on it probably this weekend, only for he was developed with Leash. Why not have a call into him, a Skype call into him, have a conversation, a chat with what went on? Because, like, Leash against Offaly was a huge game in the Joe McDonagh, because whoever won that, you're set up for the whole championship. And now Offaly going into
Westmeath.
Yeah, Brian was saying he's playing Westmeath up there, and that's going to be a huge game for them. Like, you know what I can do. So, yeah, look, again, I understand exactly where you're coming from. The Leash and Offaly players, even supporters would be upset with it too, you know. But again, it's a decision they made, and look, obviously they had to stick beside it, you know.
Ryan Mullaney was brilliant as well, and his sister-in-law passed away during the week, and he lined out for Leash, you know. And there was 11 minutes of injury time. There's a whole load of different talking points coming out of that game. And Brian, I don't want you to start criticising the Sunday game here, because I know that, like, you obviously do work for RT. I'm not going to get you going down that road, but maybe, like, like we talked here before about the Joe McDonagh Cup being sold to TG Cahir and take it out of RT's hands, who don't seem to have any interest in it.
I think that is the answer, being honest. Like, I think it's the GA, though, I have a massive issue with. Like, Sunday game has one night of highlights. They have Sunday night, and they're trying to pack everything that happened at the weekend in. TG Cahir have Monday night. They tend, to their credit, to go around the country to some of the smaller games. And Sky then have the highlights packages for the rest of the week, and they don't even bother putting one on. So, like, I just think the GAA in general are washing their hands of it, and they're quite happy for RTE, you know, to take the blame. And I'm not wearing my RTE hat on this now, being honest. Like,
RTE aren't blameless for not showing it last night either.
No,
I do take
JJ.
Well, I take JJ's. I take JJ's point. Go on.
Take more credit.
Yeah.
Like, for what's happening too, because, like, there's a mad, like, need and huge demand and appetite to see more hurling and football around the country. There's a mad need for a GAA TV channel. Like, I've said this time and time again, I'd rather pay a subscription to GAA TV than to pay it to BT or to Sky to see an odd hurling match or a football match here and there. There's so much hurling and football happening around the country that people want to watch, from Joe McDonagh, Christy Ring, Larry Marr. If we ever end up with a second, third tier football, the same in the National Hurling Leagues, National Football Leagues, the universities, there's so much out there that we could be seeing.
Yeah.
If the GAA would take some of the onus on this instead of trying to make money on it.
But like, to be fair, just cut you off there, Brian. To be fair to the football counties, that wouldn't be stood for if the tier two get cast aside. Like last night on the football, every county got shown. And even Waterford, even, you know, Wexford, all the Division 4 teams, their games were shown. This would not be stood for in the football community, that teams are being cast aside. Whereas in the hurling community, the Tier 2 competition can be completely ignored last night.
Yeah,
and that's just accepted.
Yeah, but I said this last week, like, we have rules that completely stand against certain counties. Like, look at Kerry's treatment, for example. If they win the Joe McDonagh Cup, they still don't go up to Munster. Like, Munster have completely excluded one of their own counties because, God forbid, anything had happened, the Holy Five or the Trinity, whatever we want to call them, like, those five, that, God forbid, they might have to go down. You know, where, like, Leicester, in fairness, over the years, have been a lot more inclusive. Like, they've brought Galway in, they've brought Antrim in, you know, and they brought Kerry in, actually, over the last couple of years. If Kerry had won the last couple of round-robin series, they would have went into Leinster. So, like, there is a massive problem across the board. You know, like, that there's no equality or fairness in terms of the way the championship is set up. I hope to God Carlow win a big match and stay up there at the demise of someone else. I really do.
Yeah.
Because it'll really throw the cat among the pigeons. But at the moment, it's set up that they're quite happy for teams to yo-yo up and down the way the championship is, as long as it looks ways on television, as long as we're getting high-quality matches and the Munster Championship is absolutely fine. And people can say, I'm winded and whatever about Offaly. It's nothing got to do with that at all. Carmel, to their credit, they've done brilliant over the last couple of years. They had a great, you know, I suppose, a moral victory yesterday against Colorado, but they gave it socks against them. They'll still struggle to stay up there, but they'll come down. Probably Leash will go up, but don't tell me that Leash will stay up there next year either. They'll come straight back down too.
Yeah, no, and I accept that. That's the way it's set up. I can't understand. I said to Tom Ryan when he was in here, I says, why don't you sell the Joe McDonagh Cup separately? And he went, oh, that's a good idea.
Which is,
I mean, can you believe that? So they went into a 5-year TV deal where the Joe McDonagh Cup, when they entered the TV deal, the Joe McDonagh Cup wasn't even there.
The structure's completely changed.
And now they're stuck in the no man's land where RT don't want to touch off the Tier 2. Now, they're not blameless either.
Yeah.
Sky don't want to touch off the Tier 2. Now, I think Carlow's result against Galway yesterday just highlights how much bad form it is that Laois, Offaly, Westmeath are traditional, and Antrim are traditional, have their hurling as hurling counties. Like, Laois have won a hurling All-Ireland, never a football. Like, yeah. Laois are as much a hurling county as they are football, but they're being treated like dirt after having a good result. And my point, there's a few different points in it. In RT are to blame, GAA are to blame, but I also think that the hurling community is to blame in that this is just accepted by them.
There's only two. Look, Brian hit the nail on the head there. Either you have a full GAA channel which that won't happen today or tomorrow. That's going to be down the road, a few years, whatever it is. Or else you have what you said. You have your obviously the top tier is what everyone wants to watch. But if the likes of T.G. Carter would take up, like the Joe McDonough and like that, and show games like that,
or
and
Virgin give, or whoever wants
give,
it, or
give
Air
options on it, because like if you look at it, T.G. Carter are probably, they're at the grassroots, they are everywhere, all over the country, showing club games, showing the league games, and they don't want to get a crack at the championship. So I think that, again, a Joe McDonough or something like that should be given to the likes of the T.G. Carter, and if they run with it, and then they can make whatever they want after, make after that, because like games like that on Saturday night, they should be shown, 100% they should be shown, because it's just a payback in the actual players themselves, that the work they're putting in, the actual entertainment they're providing
and
as well.
I think that as well. I think that's an important point, and it needs to be pointed out, is that players don't play for highlights. That's grand. Like, I mean, that's not their motivation. Their motivation is to play with their county, the pride in the county. But it definitely has an impact on getting some players in that might go, geez, well, no one gives a shite about that. And you can understand where they'd be coming from. Like, I mean, for it to be completely ignored at the weekend.
Just a bit of recognition.
A bit of recognition. And that improves the goodwill in the county, the atmosphere, and it has everybody potentially going, a bit of prestige. Mm. And where's the prestige in just being ignored? You know, and whether you like it or not, like, that's very far down the list of motivations for players playing. But it's still prestige playing for your county is a big thing too, and there's none. If you're a Joe McDonagh Cup player, there's none. It's just you've had a famous victory and you're a traditional hurling county and you've just completely been brushed. Mm. I swear, it's just so infuriating.
No, I agree with you, because like in certain cases, like in certain matches, be it TG Tatter or whatever, they're able to even YouTube it live, and even then there's certain counties will do the same with club matches. And in fairness, Buff Egan gets around the matches. Like, that's the only bit of Kelly Antrim I saw at the weekend, is looking at Buff Egan's content. And there were some great scores in that.
Yeah.
And it was a great win for Antrim too.
Yeah, and but this,
like,
is the thing.
A massive win. Like, and Antrim are playing Leash next again in a massive game. Hopefully you're playing Westmeath. It's a big competition. And as you keep saying, Colin, this means a lot in these counties. Like, we're hurling. In my area in Offaly, we're hurling only. And, you know, it's just a knock-on effect. And as you said, there's a lot of people at blame here. I think you're dead right. The GAA, RTE and the hurling counties in general, they're all accepted and they're all covered.
Yeah, everybody's
there's
accepted.
Only one way around this. You're going to have to be the Buff Egan for Leash. That's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go to the matches.
King.
You're going to Snapchat around the place.
There's only one Buff Egan. I'm not going to move in on his territory. But no, that's it, lads. And hopefully, I don't know, will it improve? Are we just talking? I don't see any big national campaigns to try and improve this. And, you know, where I always see these kind of things happening in football. But anyways, to move on from there, or I could spend the whole hour giving out about that. Greg Kennedy, lads, what is he doing? Like, I don't care. I don't think they really explained last night how wrong this fella was. This fella was cheating, absolutely blatantly cheating. Ran onto the field as a mentor, which I know there's one lad allowed as a runner. Mm. Mentors cannot get involved with players, with the play, with anything. You're a mentor. Now, if Greg Kennedy doesn't have the mentality to be able to run in, and I talked with Dermot O'Sullivan about this before, he was the runner for Cork, and I was saying, geez, it must be really hard. Run in the heat of battle. Yeah. You're part of this team. To not, like, try almost kind of get involved in these skirmishes, and it is hard, yeah.
Himself and Dan Shannon nearly had a run in there a couple of years ago.
They went at each other.
Yeah.
But, like, this is the thing. There's a whole mentality to that role, and Greg Kennedy doesn't have it, because that was cheating, blatant, barefaced cheating. And only the referee didn't see it. It was a straight red, and he should be stood down from running in on the pitch, because he clearly gets too involved in the game, and he ended up trying to mark a man.
It was just pure instinct. I'd say he turned around, the ball was coming at him, and he went back to mark Billy Ryan as well. Like, you know what I mean? But again, look, I heard arguments there yesterday as well, saying the referee didn't have the whistle blown, but he didn't know that. He knew, like, all he seen was a hurling ball coming at him. He caught it and turned it back and ran off the field. He knew exactly what he was doing, but he said, I just say he got involved in the game. Instinct took over. The mentor mentality, or Mayor Forney mentality, went out the window. He just thought he was a player there again, and he caught the ball and turned it back. Shouldn't have been there. I understand you can go in at a break of play, which was a break of play, but you can't interfere where the ball goes. Even if it's not been in play, you can't get interfered with the balls going or interfered with any players either. So he was 100% wrong. Now,
were you near Cody? Yeah, I was going to ask.
I was on the line now, and Cody, Derek Lean, James McGarry, each to a man went up and argued him, but I looked at him 5 minutes later and he was very sheepish. He knew he was completely wrong. He was after realising what he was after doing, and his head was in the ground, looking at the ground, wondering, "Jesus, I have to get out of here." You know that kind of way. But look, he did come back onto the field again. That didn't stop him coming back onto the field. He was back on it every time he did come back on the field. Kilkenny, crowd were booing it, but that got Kilkenny going. It got the crowd going, and since that point on, Kilkenny kind of took over a small bit there as well. So
yeah, I thought it was funny on the Sunday game last night. Donal Logue says, "Don't poke the bear," and Henry did a nice little cheeky smile then when he knew exactly what he was talking about. But that was the thing. TJ Reid said after the game, "Brian, it was a bit strange. I never seen anything like that before. But in fairness, it was a good catch out of the selector." And I saw Brian Cody share a joke with him after the game, and that's all grand. Kilkenny won. If Kilkenny hadn't won that game, there'd be uproar about this. Like, it's grand and funny when the result didn't go on the side of the fella who tried to cheat.
No, 100%. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Once Kilkenny won, they'll make light of it and won't make a big issue and leave it to the powers that be. But powers that be need to intervene, whether the whistle was blown or not. Like, it's a massive no-no from everyone's perspective. And I think he should be banned, being honest. And bringing the G into disrepute or whatever. I don't know the rule or anything, but no, it's a complete no-no. And if we allow this to stand, where does it stop? If he gets away with it, that'll be my worry. Where does it stop after that?
Yeah.
So I think he should be banned. And I won't say as a scapegoat, actions have consequences, so I do think he should be banned.
Davey Fitz got 8 weeks or a couple of years ago for going on in the field again. Like, you know what I mean? Something like similar has to happen again. Like, you can't let that go, you know what I mean? Because if the free was talking, and to say the referee did blow the whistle and Billy Ryan went in, he had an opportunity of scoring a goal. Like, you know what I mean? He's 20 yards out, no one near him, he ran in, he probably would have scored it if it had been allowed. But he was just talking to a couple of stewards after the match. They were saying they're happy enough that Kilkenny won, because if Dublin had won by a point or something like that,
They would have had a more difficult job, definitely. There's no doubt about that. What about Moran putting the penalty over to put them five up? Right?
I think he was going for the goal. Yeah.
He went very high over the bar, no?
Yeah, sometimes
he
can.
Yeah, but it was just the way he countered it, as far as I was concerned. Now, he went to go high with it, but it's just the way he struck it, it went very high. But no, he definitely went for it.
Right, okay. It looked to me that
maybe brought him up. Think about it. If he wanted to take a point, they would have put David Trace just to tap it over the bar.
Right, okay. Because, his first penalty was outstanding. Yeah. It was kind of disguised and everything, wasn't it?
Whereas a bit of confidence after the first penalty as well. So I'm going to stick this in the roof of the net, you know what I mean? You get a goal no matter where. Once across the line, it doesn't matter if it's a roof net or the bottom of the ground. Once it goes in, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
But I say you got a bit of confidence after the first penalty. Now I'm going to hang this over the top of the net. Now I'm going to put the final nail in Kilkenny's coffin. Because if that had went in, it would have been a completely different game.
Kilkenny were in big trouble then. What was the Kilkenny penalty for? That looked like there was no penalty there at all. Now, it was a goal anyways if he'd let it go. Fenley scored, but it just seemed like a shoulder coming out.
Sean Moran pulled in around top of his head, but Sean Moran, the initial contact was outside of the box. He would have been. But then he went in and Al Nolan kind of left his feet for a shoulder, but a shoulder to shoulder. But I know Colin went on and scored, but it was probably would have been, letter of the law would have been a free at 21 rather than a penalty. But
I thought both Dublin penalties were questionable as well, being honest. He went down fast enough on both sides.
He did. Rush does that though, doesn't he?
Yeah, and definitely I agree with JJ. The initial slap by Sean Moran was outside the box, so. And then Colin Fenley had it in the back, he was going mental, and you don't blame him, because he was just having a right battle with Owen O'Donnell. Hadn't scored yet at this stage, thought he was after getting a goal, and got scratched off, and God forbid, again, TJ had to miss it, but then again, we shouldn't doubt TJ. But if he did miss it, obviously the goal being turned over by the referee was a strange decision. So some real strange game like that. There was a huge amount of talking points, and as JJ says, the crowd were really up for it. It was really entertaining fair anyway.
Yeah, what about Alan Nolan? He was shuffling over and back, a bit kind of Bruce Grobbler, messing with TJ. I hadn't seen a goalie do that before, but it didn't really work.
He put him the wrong way.
which is silly, really, because I presume in hurling, once you go down, Brian, I'll ask you this because you would have taken penalties, once you go down to address and rise up the ball, sure, what the goalkeeper's doing is irrelevant to you, is it? Or why would he even...
Irrelevant. It's very hard to... In soccer, they might be able to watch where the keeper goes and put it to the side. It's very, very hard to do that in hurling, let me tell you.
That's what I was thinking.
The keeper's actually holding the wrong hand, as if you're stupid enough to think that they're the opposite-handed or whatever. Especially, in a club game, you're playing against this lad for the last 10 years or something, and he tries to hold the hurling down, and just find that hilarious.
Okay, that's just trying to get you to go the other side then, yeah. Obviously, yeah, those mind games.
So a lot of time keepers kind of like go, my time to look, he'll go my weak side.
Right.
In my open side. So if I hold the hurling the other side, the other hand, he might go up, which is a very dangerous strong side. So
okay.
A lot of bluffing going on at that stage, being honest.
Yeah.
Forwards have kind of got used to the things at times when the first came in, the keepers had the upper hand. It was quite hard to get used to the whole idea of not crossing the line, striking the ball before crossing the line. But I think forwards now are starting to get to grips with it, and you see more scored now than missed.
No, you definitely do. They seem to have copped onto it. What about Sean O'Brien's trip on Shane Kingston, lads? That has to be a straight red. Like, I mean, how can he get away with that, though? Like, it's a professional foul. Yeah. In soccer, it's a straight red. Yeah. In Gaelic football, it's a black, so you go off. Hurling hasn't legislated for this yet.
No.
But it's just wrong, lads. You can't get away with a yellow there, can you?
It's wrong. It all depends what team you're blaming.
Well, you're a defender.
You give him a pat in the back there.
Yeah, I have a feeling you both might have differing opinions on this.
I see nothing wrong with that, will you? That was an absolutely brilliant defending. Take the yellow, take one for the team, and then work away.
Jesus, what about you then, Brian? You're on my wavelength here.
Yeah, no, I hate that one now. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want to see a black card in football or in hurling or anything like that. But no, I really don't like that, because I thought that's real sneaky and dirty, to be honest. Because he clearly just tried to trip him. And look, he got really injured in that sort of situation as well. I didn't like that. But then the same thing. I suppose really, like, the only thing you can do then is give a red, because it is a professional foul, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it definitely is a professional foul.
A bigger sanction, maybe if you're outside the box, for argument's sake, and maybe give him a penalty instead for, you know, something, give him a proper punishment rather
than
just
a punishment
for 21.
That.
You know,
a
yellow's not enough punishment for that when you're straight through.
Especially if there's 5 minutes left in the game, yellow card, what's that? There's nothing, like, you know, really, you're defending your goal, is what you're trying to do. Like, you take a yellow every day of the week for it. Like, but then.
I agree with you. Like, if you're a back or like your team that's winning, like, it's the best thing you ever did. Like,
I'm not naive enough
to say otherwise.
That's the thing, and you'd be a hero in your dressing room.
But if you give away that free outside the box and then actually give a penalty instead of a free for a personal foul or something like that, bigger punishment then, like, you know what I mean? You're not too inclined doing it then, like.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I
agree.
That's
something,
a good point, yeah.
Something like that. Right, what? A couple more talking points here before we get into part two. Stephen Bennett tapped over a free in the 63rd minute. Why did he do that? Like, I mean, they were struggling to get back. Then Austin Gleeson had a go, took him off it. Stephen, we've talked about Stephen Bennett a little bit on the show. Or Stephen, maybe he didn't tap it over. Austin Gleeson told him he'd take it, and he went for a goal. He was going to take the first one. We talked about his freeze. He's not convincing with the freeze, even though he's on it. Pádraic Mahony wasn't even in the game because he's not on the freeze. Doesn't seem to help his game. We won't get into analysis, but I don't know. Would any free taker worth his salt when you're down by 5 in the 63rd minute with that chance? Yeah, like, you're going for gold there. Like, all the good ones down through the years, or all the current ones, like, even free taker, he doesn't seem to have that killer instinct, does he?
Yeah, I think he missed a couple in the first half now, kind of rattling, but he's getting a bit more confident in the second half right now. But I think Austin Gleeson kind of said, right, I'm going to take the first one. He took the second one, he went low, but the ball actually ended up over the bar, so it was. But Mara Shannon was flying around the list. He wanted to take them, but then them 21. So anyone with a bit of confidence now, I suppose, would look to take him, you know. But I don't think he's utterly over-convincing now on it. Now, maybe time will prove me wrong, but at the moment, Pádraic Mahony is such a straight strike of a ball. He's been there, done that, consistently done it over the last few years with Waterford. Why not leave him on it? You know, kind of way. I know the league's the league, all right, but different story when you're a championship back in. It's different pressure. Like, in Pádraic Mahony has done that before, and he's dealt with the pressure before, so I'd be more inclined to pull him back on it now next week, to be honest.
Yeah, what do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I just think when you've the glaring pressure coming from the inside, even though Pádraic Mahony mightn't be the one doing it, I think it just sits better if Pádraic Mahony's hitting the freeze. And I just think you're just being a little bit almost stubborn, like persistent with Stephen Bennett. Even though he, up to yesterday, hadn't done too much wrong, Pádraic Mahony, for me, would be the number one free taker. And as I said, I keep going back to Galway had this going on between Conor Rooney and Joel Hannings, and it's just eventually they just said, no, look, leave it all. Joel Hannings the best, and leave him at it. And it's a little bit of hurt for Stephen Bennett, but I think taking the pressure off him hitting the freeze would bring him back more into the game as well, because, you know, there's a lot of pressure on getting clean. I know that firsthand. And as I said, I had no problem with the club. You know, Damien Murray was better than me at freeze, and I used to let him hit them with no problem whatsoever. Something that just fits better. I go back to Park Manley. Going back to the goal situation, like, you know, it depends what the like, it's very subjective in that perspective. You know, 5 down, you know, you stick the ball over the bar, you get back out, get another handy score and go over the bar, you're into 3. You know, like, so it's just, it swings and roundabouts, really. You're a great lad when you go for it and you score, and then you miss it and it's like, oh, why didn't it happen over the bar? So it's definitely a lot harder to score 21 with the new rules, because you can't cross the line. You don't see too many of them score now when you go for goal outside the 21.
Right,
5 points to Ireland is a good, very, very, to the best lead you can have. 4 points, then your goal point, you're gone. That could happen in the space of 2 puckouts, for argument's sake, you lose and go back. But then you need 3 scores. You rarely get 2 goals in a row, so you're going to get a goal, maybe 2 points. But it's a lot of scoring to get back that 5 points lead. The 5 points is a huge lead.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, Henry would have gone for a goal there, though, would he?
I don't know. No? 2012 follower of the final,
though, he'd
have a penalty, took his point.
Right. Sorry, Brian?
Not with the new rules. I just think it's a lot harder to score them now outside the 21.
What's the new rule?
We see the same thing. You can't cross the 21-yard line with the ball. Same way as a penalty.
Oh, you can't throw it up and follow it in.
Yeah, so, like, it's a fast smash now to the pass. Like, you see penalties being missed with one-on-one. So, like, you have to go for sheer power then at that stage. And it's a lot tougher, let me tell you. So you don't see too many of them being scored. I just think... Look, it depends on the context of the game. It depends how long is left. But 7 or 8 minutes, being honest, I probably would tap it over the bar.
Right, okay. Maybe that's interesting. I'm thinking of Paul Flynn. Can we all agree Paul Flynn would have gone for it?
Top corner, so you want to hear
it. Yeah, but Kelly did it a few years ago as well. And you know, stopped, goes out for 65 and then missed the 65. You know, but it's going on. But if you missed the 65 then as well, you know, there's massive pressure on again then, you know, so it's... It's just the a lot of it has to do with the context of the game, you know, time and, you know, and the form of the player that's hitting it as well.
Yeah, okay. I think we're all going to be in agreement that the sideline ball was a Waterford ball. It went off McInerney's hand, which is a huge call at that
huge
time.
Call,
that was
like
Austin Gleeson could have put that over.
He could have,
You know, he could have lobbed it into the square.
And Dave McInerney actually hit it around 80 yards back down to the bottom, down to Waterford full back line.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant sideline from him. He's brilliant at the sidelines as well. Like, you know, he wasn't
he's
even.
He's unreal at them,
He was classy. He did over 80 yards from a sideline. Not too many lads can do it. Like, Austin Gleeson had a shot at the goal, but when Clare got the ball, it was straight down. It was a long way to come back up the field and get a score for Waterford as well. It was a double whammy now for Waterford.
It was demoralising. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, lads, during the commentary of the Tipperary-Cork game, but this is breaking news and it's shocking news. Marty Morrissey doesn't know what a hospital pass is. Do you remember this going on, right? So there's a Cork ball, right? It went out and it was, I can't remember who hit the ball, but it was hit over towards Brendan Maher's wing. Now, Brendan Maher caught it. It was a bad ball, right? So he just caught it. Nobody got injured. Nobody got hurt. Nobody. And Marty says, that's a hospital pass. I said, what is Marty on about? What the After all these years, did you notice this? No,
I didn't notice it.
Did you, Brian? No?
No, I didn't either.
All right, okay. That's shite. I should have given you a heads up on it. I just thought Marty Morrissey not understanding a hospital pass was a classic. How long is he in the game? But anyways, listen, that's it. We make it in.
When you're under it's even in the one, you know what it's all about.
we'll be back and we'll have a look at the games.
I remember my mother, the Lord of Mercy, now she's dead. She's 8 years this year. She never saw me hurling live, but she always went to the matches, to the hotel, the 2 finals, and we got off the bus after the first one, and the first person to meet me was my mother, and she said, look, that's meant to be, is meant to be. She said, keep the head up. I said, grand. No problem, ma'am, thanks. 96, back to the hotel again, first person off the bus, my mother. He says, ah, look, what's meant to be? I said, man, will you give it a fucking right?
Morris, the Tipperary won this game against Cork. We'll start there, lads. This was a convincing win, really, outside of maybe the second half of the first half when Cork kind of came into it a little bit. The big one was 13 of the starting team to play the 2016 All-Ireland Final. So this is Liam Sheedy, the great motivator. Is that it, JJ? This is his, but this is his probably best quality, is it? That he gets you fired up. He gets it, and he talked a lot in the lead up to the game about the intensity that they need to bring, the work rate that they need to bring, and maybe these are things he identified with these players, that they're all good enough and we know it, and he got that out of them.
Yeah, it was a huge thing for him, but I mean, these players did not need too much motivation. They were knocked out of the championship very, very early last year. They were sitting back looking at the best championship that ever unfolded, and they were sitting on their couch looking at it. You know, you don't need a huge amount of motivation. These lads are proven winners. They've won All-Ireland before. There's no issue regarding that. It's just to get the right motivation out of them again. He's after, look, he goes with tried and tested. He stuck with the guys that won him All-Ireland before, and he's a kind of young bench to come on there as well. You see the last 10 or 15 minutes, all the fresh heads, Jake Morris and all these lads were coming on, and they're quick as well. Like, you know what I mean? So he's looking for the ideal blend now, and maybe look like the Waterford kind of a couple of years ago, that 10, 15 minutes ago, Limerick last year, 10, 15 minutes ago, unleash the bench, fresh legs up there again, and see out the game really more than that. But Tip and Cork are always high scoring game. If you were back on either side, you know, you'd be disappointed a bit. Like 228 from Tipperary scoring is phenomenal. So 220 from play or something like that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot from play.
Something absolutely crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Where was the man on my mark? And I think Cork, as a defensive unit, don't really work together that well. They kind of play individually more than anything. And if my man doesn't score, that's okay. But that's your man over there, so you deal with him. They don't really cover each other a huge amount as well. That's where all the space come out as well. Yeah. But
Tim O'Mahony's a bit of a liability. Like, he's good on the ball. He used to be a forward, and he came into it a bit in the second half, got a point, and gave a couple of good balls in. But Bubbles took him to the bloody cleaners. Like, he doesn't know whether he's coming or going in that position.
It's very hard. Do you, as a centre back, do you actually go mark Bubbles wherever he goes? Because you don't, you leave the centre wide open for Shane McCallan as well.
That was a great move by Tip, putting Bubbles on him, I thought.
Yeah. And Bubbles look fit enough now, in fairness. He's fit as I've seen in the last couple of years now, and moving very well. He got 7 points from play there as well. All kind of different scores as well. He's right or left. And he made the goal for John McGrath as well. He's just a phenomenal player. On his day, he's absolutely phenomenal. And I think Damien, now, in fairness, Damien Hayes, a couple of years ago, said if you put Bubbles out, he got a bit fitter, put mouse centre forward, he'd make the whole thing tick, like, you know what I mean? He's so good on the ball. He's such an eye there as well, and never mishits the ball, always goes to the player as well, Tipperary player. So himself and Noel McGrath are kind of joy to watch when they link up. I think Noel McGrath got a point in the second half as well. It was just 1-2 down the line, flip wrist straight over the bar. The two
that was fantastic.
Watch,
like. That was Harlem Globetrotters type hurling. You know, almost we've seen that kind of stuff from Limerick a little bit. Like, Tip mixed up the short game and the long game. I know Doignan was saying on the COCOM that there was a contrast in styles. I didn't think Tip were a long ball team. And anyway, there's nothing wrong with it being a long ball team against Cork, who play no sweeper. You'll get joy out of that anyway, Brian.
Yeah, no, I think in fairness to Tip, they always try and play, like, not high long ball, to play, try to play a lovely low ball in front of their forwards. The likes of Shamey coming onto it and John McGrath. But going back to the loose marking by Cork, you've seen it highlighted on the Sunday game last night. The space that Bubbles was left for that goal that he set up for John McGrath was absolutely ridiculous. I don't know who it was. I think it was Tim O'Mahony who was supposed to be marking him. And just two defenders in Cork just ran out the field and left Bubbles all alone in the square. Like, and I think that's kind of half to look for him now from the one side. It was obviously trying to roar the car to come back, but they couldn't hear him with the crowd. And Bubbles, great movement, didn't just stand there, got over to the corner and blew the glass on with that Bubble. But like, crazy stuff. Like, I don't know, I've never seen that at this county level, where a lad would be standing on his own at the edge of the square inside the 21.
No.
Like, completely unmarked, and no one within 30 metres of him. Like,
but this is a novice centre back, though. This is an ex forward playing centre back, I suppose, Brian.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I suppose it does come back to the fullback as well, though. Like, the fullback needs to be talking to his centre back in that situation. So if the centre back was going back out to his position, there's no way the fullback can get drawn out after the ball either.
Yeah.
You know,
but Callan,
you have to be sitting back, and JJ will definitely back me up on that one.
Yeah, Bubbles walked past the wing back and the corner back to go into that space into the corner. So that situation, you need communication there. If Tim O'Mahony's got out the field, the cornerback has to stay on Bubbles and get someone else to mark his man, and then your man will go on Tim O'Mahony. Tim O'Mahony will fall back one. Rather than Tim O'Mahony running back 40 yards to get back into the cornerback, which he'll never make it anyway, the cornerback should be there, wing back pick up the corner forward, Tim O'Mahony come 10 yards over to mark the wing forward. As a unit, you kind of move one axis really more than that, and you pick up the man closest to it. Wait till the ball goes out of play, pick up your own man after that then again. Communication, so that's what I'm saying. Like,
there should be a general leader there, but there doesn't seem to be.
Has to be.
O'Mahony's not it. Cadogan had his hands full with Callan.
O'Mahony might be it. Right. I think he's a good player, and I think at the time he settled back in centre back.
There's been a good player and there's been a good centre back though, because it's such a technical position. Like, I know it's completely different Gaelic football, but there's the only position on the Gaelic football field I never made a good fist of. I was a bit all over the place in centre back, because I think you have to learn it over a period of time.
Yeah, but you need the lads around you working with you, you know, that kind of way, because if you're the centre forward, like, as a centre back you have to probably stay in the middle a bit more often. If your centre forward goes out the field, you're hoping one of your midfielders is going to pick him up, or goes in the corner, your wing picks him up for a few minutes there as well. Like, you know, you need lads around you that will cover him as well. Like, you know, you can't do it yourself.
They did well on Tipperary did well on the Nash puckouts, because we talked about this on Thursday about whether, you know, they do the Limerick and Clare thing where they drop half a line, and they seem to do that. They were intercepting a lot of them, Brian.
Yeah, and obviously usually Nash's puckouts is a huge strength of theirs, but yeah, they held their line really well. Brendan Marin, particularly in the second half, cleaned up from that perspective. Yeah. He used to mix it up. So they needed an alternative then as well. They weren't able to go long. They were struggling to go short. But I think that's the thing with Cork. I think if you can stop them from going long, where they've, you know, like the Conor Lehan and Seamus Harney running onto ball into space, you can stop that ball initially. They're under pressure going into that game. To me, their forwards are class. I thought it was a little bit harsh even the manager and the kind of talk after the game that Pat Horgan was on his own. Right? Conor Lehan got three points, I think, from play. You know, Seamus Harney got one, two. Like,
and Kingston got three.
Kingston, got three, had a good second half. Like, you know, to me, there was massive problems down the other end. You know, the unit, the Cork unit, their defence is just, it's too porous, essentially. And, you know, we talked about Cadogan there. You know, the point I was trying to make there is that Cadogan's full back, there's no way you should be out with that ball where there was a ruck for it, 50 metres out from goal, out under the stand. Like, there's no way he should be out that far. If he is going that far, well, then it's up to others, obviously, to be covering. So it's just a crazy situation. You're leaving yourself wide open inside. So as a defensive unit, it's certainly not good enough. And you expect Cadogan, like, if you look at the six backs that they have, you expect Cadogan, without putting too much pressure on him, but you expect him to be the leader there. The fulcrum, you know, the fullback can see it all in front of him, between himself and Nash, obviously. They're barking out all the orders, and they're making sure that, you know, everything's set up defensively the way they want it. Bill Cooper was a big loss then as well, because he would cover back an awful amount, you know, whereas opposed to Fitzgibbon would be getting up the field. Whereas with me then, much more attack-minded player when he went to midfield. So they were way too open at the back. You know, Tipperary putting up way too big a score from play completely. And a lot of tip and discipline from giving away soft frees, particularly in the first half, kept Cork in the game for large parts of it.
Yeah, no, definitely did. I thought Dignam was poor on the co-com yesterday, JJ, and I don't think he gave a good picture of where everyone was, because he never said Bubbles was centre forward, and it was a really sunny day and different helmets were similar.
And
it took me maybe into the second half to go, geez, Bubbles is out centre forward. It shouldn't have to be doing that, because he can see in much easier. Lehan confused me as well, because he clearly started in the corner, then he seemed to come out onto Brendan Maher, and then they seemed to be sending puckouts towards Lehan on Brendan Maher, and Lehan runs into space, but he seemed to be standing beside, and he didn't give any flavour of that, even though the idea with me with Lehan 2 years ago when they beat Tip in Semple Stadium is Lehan started centre forward and Ronan Maher and ran the shite out of him and ran him to the two wings. Now, they didn't do that. Harney didn't run Maher, and I don't know, I just thought Dignan could have told you a little bit more about what was going on off the ball yesterday.
You see, the Bubbles and Noel McGrath are very, very similar the way they play, and at Green Helmet as well, and then you have Bonner Maher and Niall O'Mara, two left-handed hurlers, two white helmets as well,
and the two Maher's
in the half-back lane. They look very, very similar, right?
I was like, where's everyone here?
Takes a bit of time.
That's yesterday we needed Dignan, and Dignan's excellent in the first 30 seconds of giving you a few positional switches,
but then
he forgets about it for the rest of the game. Do you know what I mean?
They're
just as important for the rest of the game.
Yeah, even the start of the second half, you kind of have to tell you where guys are going as well. Like, yeah, but it's Bubbles, massive truck of Liam Sheedy, putting out centre forward. Obviously, you put a gun to his head. He said, right, you have to get your fitness right or you won't be on this team. Like, you know what I mean? Which he seems to have a lot of work done now as well now this summer. He looked trim now yesterday again. That's what I said. Yeah. He looks trim now.
He was flying it. Brian, three players I have down here in the notes for Cork that were completely ineffective that were so important last year was Dara Fitzgibbon, Mark Coleman and Daniel Kearney. They didn't, like, they were the three players really that changed Cork last year and made them tick, and none of them were in the game really.
Yeah, and look, a lot of that comes down to the way that Tipperary set up, because they really clogged that middle third and they brought it into a battle. And the likes of Coleman, Fitzgibbon, apparently they're such, you know, kind of freestyle hunters. They're up and down the field. They try and run a loose ball, massive pace, but they were running into, you know, even if they did get a ball, they were running into dead ends. And, you know, you have to give Tip credit from that perspective. I think they learned a huge amount from last year's game at Turles, and I think that's something that Sheedy's done all this year. Even in the Munster League earlier, Clare took him to the cleaners. You know, a couple of weeks later in league, you know, they counteracted Clare's style and they comprehensively beat Clare that time too. So there's a serious amount of video analysis and tactical analysis being done by Tipperary at the moment, and they're really trying to counteract the strong tactics of other teams. And I think that's pretty impressive from Liam Sheedy's perspective as well, because it's not just a case of just putting your best 50 players on the field either. He's nullifying their threats, and it allows the likes of Roman Maher, who is suspect with a bit of pace, you know, when he's run at, but it allows him then to have that cover around them. And, you know, again, they're trying to put up a wall there in the half-back line. I think that's the linchpin of any strong team. If you look at the names of the half-back line between Tipperary and Cork, like, just like Brendan Maher, Ronan Maher and Pádraig Maher, look at that half-back line as opposed to the Cork one. You know, it's just, you can see straight away where this has been won and lost. And then obviously bring in a really hard working half forward line, which Tip did. You know, in fairness to Bubbles, he not just got around and got scored, but he did work hard, and so did Shamey Cannon. So, you know, a lot of credit to Tipperary from that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Jason Ford wasn't at his best. Niall O'Leary did a good job on
he
him.
Did, actually,
he was a tenacious little fella.
Yeah.
Gave away the penalty. Nearly so eager to get involved that he nearly went over the top.
He had to kind of make it, yeah.
He definitely had. They're able to produce cornerbacks, Cork.
Yeah, no problem with that.
Cork have a lot of problems, though, JJ, on the evidence of yesterday, don't they? Like, to go from where they went last year, having Limerick beaten, to that yesterday. Now, Tip deserves a lot of credit, obviously, but Cork, geez, they were just...
Can I just go back to that penalty for a second, if you don't mind? Niall O'Meara took forever. He's fair lucky the referee gave a penalty there. Now, it might have been a penalty. They're borderline calls. A lot of referees want to wave play on there now.
He took
so long over that ball. I know he did, but he took so long over the ball. Like,
but that's irrelevant how long he takes. He was taken out.
I don't know what, JJ. What do you reckon? I know, like, your initial call now, I think.
I was in that situation, would have tried to do the exact same thing.
He missed the ball.
If you had to give a penalty, I'd have to take it. Do you know what I mean? That, fair enough.
Yeah, you take it, there's many a time, like, we've seen in hurling matches, like, that penalty wouldn't be given.
Yeah, be 70-30 now, you get it. The penalty given all the time. 30% now, you're chancing his arm right now, but.
Because the ref was harsh on Cork then towards the end, wasn't he?
Yeah,
just the Horgan free was a disgraceful one.
Yeah,
can't wrap your hand around.
No,
right?
He wasn't. You're trying to help. But Kyle Barrett had a great game for Tipperary again, like, back in the corner. He's very, very tenacious as well, and that's what Tipper were lacking over the last couple of years as well, like, you know. But back to Tipperary forward for a second, work rate at the run were very good.
Work rate was good. O'Mara's a very good player.
Very good
player.
Very good. He's vital to how they actually play, because you can't have six absolutely unbelievable forwards with no workers in it. Now they have Niall O'Mara, Bonner O'Mara, they'll do all donkey work. Bubbles will get in, and Shamey will kind of sprint back and now and again, like, just chase back a couple of lads as well. Like, but yeah, it's Cork. Go back to the Cork issue as well. Again, people, it's kind of a template there for any other team playing Cork now at the moment. Stop Coleman, stop Fitzgibbon. You have a fair chance, because even Myler after the game, we usually pitch in with 4 or 5 points from midfield. You can't really expect a midfielder to score 4 or 5 points every game. You know, kind of way, you need more from your forwards or half back line as well. I think it was just, he was probably expecting Fitzgibbon to get another 3 or 4 points. It's very hard to keep that consistency going. Like.
Yeah, no, it is. I presume O'Mara was on Coleman. Was he quieting him, or was it Bonner O'Mara? Again, with the same helmets, you're silly, and Deignan not helping us out. So, right, we'll have to leave that one, lads. We'll talk about Clare Waterford. We'll cover Kilkenny Dublin in performance of the weekend, just to save a little bit of time. This was how Waterford got within a point of Clare, JJ. Yeah. You'll never know. They were poor all day, Waterford. Clare were good. So I don't know, is this a blot on Clare's performance that they even allowed Waterford? But they just had a much easier style. They'd had a dangerous two-man full forward line who stayed close together and worked off each other, where Waterford played a two-man full forward line. No, for brothers, they have no communication. Yeah. They run in opposite directions. Yeah. They both sprint to either wing. So Waterford are never getting ball kind of in dangerous positions in there. Whenever the Bennetts get on it, they're out in the sideline.
Yeah.
Whenever Conlon or Shane O'Donnell are on it, Shane O'Donnell's buzzing around Conlon, maybe, you know, for a tap over point. And Waterford just struggles.
They work very well together. But I think it was Clare's. Clare had a great, probably 60 minutes, 55, 60 minutes. But again, the old failure of this Clare team as well, they don't put teams away. They let Waterford back in. It wasn't Waterford coming back in. They let Waterford back into it. Their big guns kind of didn't see Tony Kelly huge amount in the last 10 minutes. Didn't see Shane O'Donnell a huge amount in the last 10 minutes. John Conlon. Up to that, the three guys were running the whole game. Like, Tony Kelly had a brilliant first half.
Yeah.
Shane O'Donnell is probably the hardest person to mark in the full forward line at the moment. He just turns on his sixpence. He rises the ball up in the hand and turn and gone in the same movement.
And he's a pest as well, isn't he?
He's brilliant at tackling. Yeah. Brilliant, very, very good tackling, and very, very good in the air as well. And what he's very good is himself and John Conlon are communicating a lot there as well, because if John goes up, no point in Shane going up as well, because the two backs will go up and he'll go on the break. But he's so quick, he's so, so quick, and he just goes direct for the goal. His second option is to take a pint.
But they work in there, and Podge Collins back into his old role, buzzing out around and leaving the two lads inside. And look, you know, in the first half, they just look very dangerous.
He could have got a second goal as well, only for, I don't know, was it a free? Or Nolly Connors made the most of a bit of contact there as well. Only for that, it would have been a second goal as well. So, and if they had scored that, you never know what would have happened. But the only, I think Clare hurt well, but the failure mentality of letting teams back into it, if they stay doing that during championship, that's going to cost them.
Yeah,
definitely, 100%.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. What do you think, Brian? Like, I mean, Clare have a good look to them. Then you have Duggan Kelly and Dermot Ryan. Didn't score yesterday, but he put himself about. They definitely have a nice little mix in that forward line, which I think I'm just contrasting this completely to Waterford, who don't seem to have any kind of chemistry in their forward line.
Yeah, and look, I've said it for the last couple of weeks. I think Clare are a dark horse for this All Ireland, but they have to sort out their consistency issues. And again, it was evident yesterday. Shane O'Donnell, he's class, but hilarious. He doesn't actually score a huge amount on certain days. Like he I thought he was deadly yesterday. He was 8 or 9 out of 10, and he only got a pint.
Yeah.
But when he does score, like he did in Ireland a few years ago, he is actually staple of scoring, you know, 2-3, 2-4. So he's a real team player, because he wins ball, so dangerous running, and not afraid to offload it then as well.
Yeah,
he attracts a lot of defenders when he's running with the ball, and he gets it. He turns his own man, and then everyone has to go to him. So that's why he slip a pass there as well. Like
he's selfless too. He's a very good all round player.
Yeah. Very good at that perspective.
Another problem, I think, that I'll give this to you because I cut you off, Brian. Another problem we have with Waterford is Jack Brown went sweeper because Mikey Kearney offers no real threat. So Jack Brown sees he's on Mikey Kearney, centre half forward. Mikey Kearney's no Joe Canning, he's no Bubbles. He just dropped off him, covered the two Bennetts, and maybe that's why the two Bennetts kept running to the wings to get ball, because that kind of ball, you know, around the D was being covered by Brown. I don't know, because it wasn't until Maurice Shanahan came on, remember Tommy Ryan gave him that ball. Like, how is it the two Bennetts can never gather a ball like that, that's in front of the goal, and turn and put it over? Like, I mean, I think their runs are all wrong, their communication with each other is all wrong. I think Kearney's messing them up by going too deep into midfield and the centre back not respecting him and coming back covering them. I think they've fierce amount of problems up front, Waterford.
Yeah, look, I think it's the Ewers as opposed to just the two Bennett brothers as well. It is their style of hurling too. They're trying to work it through the lines then and play, you know, almost a perfect ball inside. You know, when they went route one for those last 10 minutes, which is almost desperation stuff, like, they caused massive problems. So they're caught between two styles, I think, at the moment, between, you know, the Derek McGrath hugely tactical type of a style and a little bit more orthodox in Fanning. So it's just, I still think that's why I like Clare and I like Limerick at the moment is that they're able to mix up both styles. They're able to play it short when needs be, but they're able to go with the out ball straight down the centre on top of John Conlon and corner forwards feeding off it. Like, I think Waterford, with their mix of styles, would be better placed if they actually did that.
Yeah. The two matchups they did from the start was Tadhg Na Bhfirce on Tony Kelly. That didn't work at all. And Conor Gleeson on Colm Galvin. That did work. So maybe swapping them around, Gleeson on Kelly, might have been the smart. It's okay in hindsight, but looking at that at the start, I would have said I wouldn't mind those two.
Looking at the game before, then you expect that to happen. Conor Gleeson is a brilliant man marker as well, like, you know. But Tony Kelly just had the run of the whole field. Like, he never contests a 50-50 ball himself. He's always around the periphery, running across the line.
He's a huge skill of doing that, doesn't he?
Brilliant. He just timed it so well, like, you know. And
he ghosts around the place.
And he's so accurate off right or left. I don't mean accurate, but he always makes the goal. Like, it's never a tap into the keeper's hands and the ball's sitting in the field before in 4 or 5 seconds. You know, he's accurate as well, but he has the power on right or left from 65, 70 yards out to make the distance for a shot at goal as well. Like, you know, worst case scenario, it's a puck out for Waterford, but Everton the Clare team is reset by the time that comes in, like, you know. So he's a great, great player.
But he's brilliant. But he not only makes the runs, but they give him the ball.
Yeah.
One of his scores in the first half, like, he was literally, he passed out Dermot Ryan.
Yeah.
And Dermot Ryan hand passed the ball like a yard to him. You know, whereas most other teams in the country, Dermot Ryan would have struck that ball himself or might have tried to draw a runner, but it would have allowed other cover to get back on Tony Kelly. So it was just like, off you go, Tony, you do what you do. I think that's amazing. I think that's when Clare are at their best, they are, you know, Tony Kelly's buzzing around the place and he's just coming off the shoulder of players. And like that's very hard for any man marker to actually stop, because he's just making that run and he's coming straight for goal and it's just offloaded from, you know, and he's so hard to stop. He's brilliant. Like, 5 points in play again, he's just so consistent. He's class at
it. It's crazy. It's the bloody 5 points. He's nearly always around the 5 point mark as well. Like, it's unreal. What about Shane Bennett, the centre forward? Because Shane Bennett for me is not an inside forward. He's a strike runner and he's great pace. The centre back will have to respect him a little bit more because he's more dangerous than Kearney, and play Maurice Shanahan. Shanahan always plays well for Waterford. Yeah. Why does he come in and out? Now, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but for me, whenever he comes on, there's danger in there. Suddenly there's a presence. They've got a long ball option, not into the corner or onto the wing, standing on the edge of the square, where when he catches it, he can lay it off or he can shoot himself. Yeah. And then you can work off him. For me, Waterford aren't working off anyone. It's almost like, I don't know, they're making it up as they go along. Is that unfair?
Waterford, he went too much with the sharp puck. They're hitting the 21 and Clare were just standing off him, letting...
Clare wants you to do that.
That's why the Bennetts were running to the wings, because the one in the corner back had it. They're working up the field and try to get into that corner. But I'd put Austin Gleeson centre forward, because a centre back has to answer the question, do I stick with him wherever he goes, or do I let him off? You let Austin Gleeson off, he's a better chance of scoring. Wing forward, I think you can detail a man marker with him and takes him out of the game, but they're going to have to answer that question. I don't think Maurice Shanahan, with age he's in at the moment now, I don't think he has probably 70 minutes in him. 100% impact sub, and he was very, very good yesterday again. 10-15 minutes at most, I'd bring on Morris. I wouldn't be starting Morris, to be honest with you.
Okay, he just seems to give them a focal point that they don't have without it. They don't seem to have any other option anyways, because it's Patrick Curran and it's smaller Tommy Ryan and it's these smaller players other than that. So maybe it's hard to know. It's weird that we're completely down in Waterford and talking off Clare and there was a point in it in the end. It's weird the way...
Waterford are in big trouble now, though, because, you know, they're going to tip now... No more than Carter in big trouble as well. Like, losing, we said this coming into this championship, like, losing the first game was going to have a massive effect on them. But especially Waterford was at home, exactly.
So was Cork.
They didn't make it into this big fortress that they were going to make an out that they were going to be made into, you know. And Clare just, they dictated it from the very start. And, you know, at this point, from that perspective, from Waterford, they never got the crowd to get behind them. You know, they needed to give them a lift or two.
Jimmy,
I think Austin Gleeson tried a few times, you know, got a couple of big scores, big fist pumps as well. But, you know, you need to be way more physical all over the field and driving out a ball and turning a few lads upside down, I think, to get that crowd behind you.
So, one of your main players as well, Jamie Barron, being took off 15 minutes ago, you know what I mean? You'd be, as a Waterford manager, you're kind of saying, right, Jamie Barron, you're looking at 8, 9 out of 10 every game. You're not coming. He was took off. You know, it's a huge blow. You can't legislate for something like that either. You know, it's, no. It's unfortunate.
Didn't look to me like he would deserve to be taken off, but not that I was able to. Not that I know any better or anything. I don't know. Like, I mean, was he having a nightmare? I don't remember.
Well, it's not a huge amount of ball now, to be fair. But then Walsh Parker is not really for a midfielder.
There's not as much space.
Yeah.
Flying over.
Especially if you're going short and you're going over the half back line, midfielders is completely bypassed. You know?
Okay. Right. Listen, we'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
A lot of people do say, what do you love about hunting? Is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things. Right? Absolutely.
Okay, Paddy Power performance of the weekend. First nominee I have down here, I think TJ Reid. We're going to ban TJ Reid and Tony Kelly from performance of the weekend, or else we just have to repeat ourselves. So I'm scratching Tony Kelly off and I'm scratching TJ Reid off, because this is just getting so consistent with these lads of being brilliant. I'm going to go with Pádraic Walsh from Kilkenny and Owen O'Donnell from Dublin. So Pádraic Walsh pretty much changed the game around, and Brian Cody changed the game around, really, because, well, am I right in saying Hugh Lawler was getting a hard time by Sutcliffe? He went full back, or Pádraic Walsh went centre back, which completely transformed Kilkenny. Lahey came into midfield. And was there a change up front as well when Lahey? Oh no, Morrissey came off. So it was just one sub off. Lahey came on for Morrissey, and that rejiggle completely transformed Kilkenny's day, JJ.
Yeah, the huge 10 or 15 minutes after half time, Hugh Lawler caught one over Liam Rush, whereas in the first half, Liam Rush was breaking that down or winning it himself on Paddy Deegan there as well. And then Pádraic caught an unbelievable ball going backwards, kind of fell over backwards as well, cleared up the field, and then TJ got the goal off it. But looking back on TJ's goal, his first touch for that, he had no right to get that ball in the first place. His first touch was unbelievable. Got up 30 yards out, 9 times in, lads would take a handy score. He seen there was something on, back 1-2 with Colin straight into the goal. Phenomenal. But Pádraic thundering into the game, Hugh Lawler getting on top of Liam Rush, and the goal, the first 10-15 minutes was huge for Kilkenny as well. And then they put doubts in Dublin's mind, and David Tracy missed a few frees last 10 or 15 minutes as well. Just that all kind of things came back to haunt Dublin again. Like, you know, a score will freeze, you have to score every single one of them. Look at TJ now, he's just like radar, bang, bang, bang. Yeah. He's going to score them all. Whereas when the pressure was on, Dublin missed a few vital frees as well.
Dublin will have to be demoralised after that, Brian. Like, I mean, 5 championship debutants for Kilkenny. We know all about their injuries. Dublin were primed, go up to Nolan Park, perform well in the first half, and then fall away. Like, I mean, that's very disappointing from their point of view. Like, is it as simple as just saying they don't have a Shamey Callanan or a TJ Reid, or, you know, like, I mean, all the top teams, Galan, they don't have a marquee forward? Or is that analysis too simplistic for them?
Probably not too simplistic either. There's certainly a valid point in that, because there's some really dangerous forwards, but yeah, they've no X factor, in fairness. Like, Eamon Dillon had a good league, particularly towards the closing end of the league, and he didn't score. You know, Oisin O'Rourke was injured, so he wasn't available, and he also had a decent enough league. But I suppose when you're going down to play Kilkenny in Nolan Park, you need someone or a good few forwards stepping up to the plate. They did that in the first half, and they got their tactics spot on. But in the second half, when they really needed them, you know, they were really found wanting them. They scored 4 points in play in the second half. Chris Crummy got 2 from right half back, 2 long range shots. Now, he's very accurate from distance. He always scores, to give him his credit. But like Danny Sutcliffe, when he got 2 points, when he was putting corner forward for the last 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
So they got no return up front whatsoever. And that was disappointing. And look, Danny Sutcliffe ended up with 4 points. Can't really, you know, say too much about him, but at the same time, for those 20-25 minutes he was on Pádraic Walsh, you know, Pádraic Walsh was absolutely cleaning up. And I definitely agree with you putting in Pádraic Walsh. From that perspective, when we're leaving out TJ, a lad, but his move to centre back in particular, I thought he re-energised, you know, Kilkenny. I think invariably Cody now has found a kind of a much more settled team. You know, really was the talking point coming into that game, seeing Paddy Deegan playing full back and Hugh Lawler at centre back. You know, in that second half, when they got a half back line of Deegan, Walsh, and Conor Fogarty, it just seemed not good past them at that particular particular stage. And, a lot, very, very impressive return from Kilkenny. You know, they'll still have a lot of work to do to really, like, push on and win All Ireland, don't get me wrong, but still a hugely impressive victory on Saturday night. And as I said, I found it a hugely entertaining game.
They mix it up as well now, even for the second half to win short and a few puckouts they picked out. Conor Fordy got two, Alan Murphy got one, Parry got one there as well. They're 40 yards out, but first half they were very predictable, long. Either TJ or Walter was hitting. Every single puckout went long. Dublin kind of fell back, and that's where they were kind of dominant in the first half. Second half, then I'd say Kilkenny caught out Dublin a bit now, because the lads were 40 yards out in the half back line and they were getting the puck out, and then that launched their attack there for Kilkenny as well.
And is Darren Brennan known for these good pick out?
He would be a good keeper now. He would be very accurate as well. But I'd say the first half, this was his debut as well.
Like, you're
getting the ball out there. And in fairness, he tried one in the first half, and Dublin ended up getting a score out of it. So that knocked his confidence a bit. But in the second half now, he was just very, very accurate with it. Now, you have to be impressed with him.
Yeah.
And because
they
Dublin
were 83% on puck outs in the second half.
It's phenomenal, yeah. Yeah.
She's fair play to him.
Yeah, I give credit to Dublin in that first half too as well. Their halfback, like, they went man for man completely. Sean Mullen didn't play centre back, he actually played wing back. Chris Cumley was marking Walter Walsh, and Shane Barrett was on TJ. Well, marking is a kind of a loose term, because the three of them now were over the line in terms of the dark arts and trying to really annoy the three players. I was persistent. In fairness to the players, they kept it cool. The Kenny forwards kept it cool. And then we seen Chris Cumley with his dive at the end. That was disappointing too. He was after scoring the point, he came back and he hit Walsh a slap, good shoulder, and the two boys went at it, and then he just threw himself on the ground. So that was disappointing. But in the first half, like, the three of them, they really upset the Kenny forwards in terms of being in their faces, hurling on the edge or over it. And to stop any win in prime position. So it certainly worked in the first half, but I suppose the boys probably got hairdryer treatment at half three from Cody and went back out and just, really went at it. Actually, the one thing I loved was after Walter Walsh and Cody had their bit of handbags, the next ball, straight away the ball was tucked down between the two of them. I just thought it was and Walter Walsh actually won it and offloaded it. So that's great from a hurling perspective to see. Just put it down between the two of them. Let's see what happens.
I love your mentality, Les. I love the warrior mentality. What about Adrian Bullen, JJ? Because you were thinking it might be a year too early for him. How did he do?
He's done well now. Done well in his debut as well. He quit himself very well. Got on the ball in the first 10-15 minutes. Done everything very, very simple there as well. Got a score. He could have got a couple more in the second half there as well. But no, overall, he worked very hard now as well. In fairness to him, he worked. He's back in the half back line in the second half, kind of picking up ball and getting it down the field. So, no, very impressed with him now himself. I thought Tommy Welsh is a brilliant corner back now as well for his debut too. He seems to be at home there as well. He's quick and he attacks the ball there as well, and got a great score. Could have went in for a goal on his debut, but yeah, phenomenal player as well. Like, so the few of the younger lads that came on, Alan Murphy got 3 points there as well. A few of the younger lads came on, they kind of stuck their claim there for the championship jersey for now on, it's great.
You're down to the bare bones. They were about down to the bare bones. Like, Hugh Lawler had played full back during the league, and I know they was kind of patching things up and it was all over the place. Putting him back full back now, where he's probably better, and putting Pádraig Walsh centre back, and now you have a good half back line. And then I think Richie Leahy, I never always scratch my head whenever I see him not on the team, anyways, because he's a bit of a chaff, fits kind of a pure hurler in midfield. I don't know why he's not a guarantee in there anyway.
He came on and played well, he got a couple of points, all right, give away a couple of frees, but maybe that's. Small thing is working against him that bit more, but
he's a little bit looser as well, so I can see why he's been brought in. Starting the game, as is totally different than coming into a game that's kind of opened up a little bit. So I think it probably suits, and he's brilliant coming in. He'll always get you a couple of scores. Like, that's worth its weight in goal as well. You need players that come in off the line and actually make an impact.
Right, okay, come here. What about Austin Gleeson? So he scored 4 inspirational scores. He celebrated all of them. Wasn't massively in the game. Wasn't probably on Tony Kelly's level. Still, you're coming out of that game saying Austin Gleeson played well. You know what I mean? He scored 4 great scores at important times, I suppose. Got them off the ground, then got a few good ones in the second half. I'm putting him in as a nomination.
Look, he's after setting his own standards. Austin is now, to be fair. I don't think he hit him yesterday. Now, he hit him at times, but went back out of the game there as well. If you're looking at your marquee player, TJ in the first half wasn't, Kilkenny weren't going well, but he was the still one constant that Kilkenny had in that first half. Hooking, blocking, throwing off ball to someone else, he was absolutely brilliant in the first half. Austin needs to just bring that more to his game.
Right.
Getting other lads involved in the game, because when he gets the ball, he'll always draw two or three defenders. So there's obviously going to be loose forwards somewhere else. So get that ball to your other forwards. Doesn't matter if he scores. Okay. Once Waterford score, you'd be happy. It was kind of, look, again, he showed in glimpses what he can do. But as if I was a Waterford supporter, I'd want to see that more consistently, to be honest.
I want to see him being on a bit more. Maybe being out in the wing on the likes of Davy Fitzgerald, who's a big man, probably isn't the best for your marquee player. But they're always kind of talking about how to get him into the game. Brendan Maher rolled back the years. Brian, again, we're not sure what the hell was happening with Conor Lehan, unless you can shed some light on why Conor Lehan seemed to be outstanding beside him and seemed to be a target for puckouts.
Yeah, it was a real strange one. But like, you have to give credit to Brendan Maher coming back from a crucial injury. You know, he'd only played, I think, one, maybe two rounds of the championship with his club coming into this game, and to be in such shape and to put in such a performance, you know, that's hugely impressive. You know, got a couple of scores even as well, offload a lot of ball. So look, it's real Raider Rovers stuff when you see that coming back like that. But yeah, Conor Lehan and Cork tactics seem to play into Brendan Maher's hands. But as I said earlier, I do think he was helped with the tactics of Tipperary and making sure that they clogged up that middle third and allowed the halfback line to sit in the pocket. The space wasn't in front of them. Because last year, Pádraig Maher was marking Daniel Kearney, and we mentioned this earlier, but the space in front of him was huge. Like, there was 20 and 30 metres in front of him in Turles. So I think credit has to go to Tip's tactics just as much as the performances of the halfback line.
Yeah, definitely. He had an altercation with Kearney as well. There was no falling down after that. No one did a crummy. They pushed and shoved.
Brendan Maher's not afraid of that in person. he went in to give it as well. Yeah.
Kearney didn't stand back from him either, though, did he? He went back at him and gave him a... I think he tried to give him a box in the face guard, did he? Once? Right, one or two other nominations. Marty Kavanagh, lads. Obviously, Carlo, he scored 11. 5 from play, 6 frees. And Carlo really had, with not too long left, they had it back to 3 points. And do you know what I mean? That's just sensational. Yeah. Again, great to see him doing it at that high level. Mark Kavanagh, almost his namesake, 11 points for Laois. 8 frees, he got 1 sideline, 2 from play. He was outstanding as well. And remember, the only other game I saw Laois playing was against Limerick, and I thought Limerick were just a class above, except for Mark Kavanagh, probably Paddy Purcell that night. So he's obviously at that level, top class player. Ryan Mullaney as well, and Chad Dwyer apparently were really good up front as well.
Even though they didn't win, Oisín Kelly scored 2-3.
Oisín Kelly scored 2-3. Ryan Mullaney obviously is not up front. Chad Dwyer is up front. Oisín Kelly, he was back. Jeez, when I saw that Offaly forward line, Oisín Kelly back, and then Shane Dooley and Bergen starting, I was starting to think, Jesus Christ, now they have all their men back that they were missing during the league, Brian. I was thinking Laois could be up against it going away.
But you did, like, 3:21. Like,
some score.
You know, and Dooley didn't score either. Like, so, you know, they got the score. The problem was the other end of the field, essentially. You know, so we had concerns going into the game, you know, in Offaly, you know, with our defence. We were missing a couple of players, but that's excuses too, as far as I'm concerned. We should have been a lot better set up defensively. Again, crazy passing defence, short hookouts when we had 6 giants up in the forward line. And they should have been going route one as much as possible, and the onus should be back on the players to win. Like, no more than a half time in the Dublin Kilkenny game, the onus put back on the players to win your high ball when you're 6'2" or 6'3". That's what you're up there to do. Like, don't be making excuses. So,
it's weird then, because if they were going short from the puckouts, because I was told from play they were very one dimensional, and they were driving everything into Joe Bergen in the full forward line. Yeah. So there's no consistency there. Why would you go, if that's your tactic to go long, why would you be instructing puckouts to go short? You know what I mean? That's a bit of a head scratcher. Patrick Horgan, lads, Donalogue, we'll finish up with him. Donalogue Cusack said he would turn and score in a phone box, and he's right. Like, I mean, geez, some of his scores yesterday, how he can generate the power he does. Like, I mean, holy shit. And even the free that he went back almost into his own 21-yard line. He's brilliant. Now, he is in that Horgan, Callanan, Joe Canning, John Connellan.
Yeah.
Dublin don't have that. TJ Reid, do they? And that's it. Well, I'm not going back to Dublin now. Yeah. Let's talk about Patrick Horgan quickly, because there's not much more can be said about it. Is he the best, the strongest wrists in the country, Joe Canning him?
You're trying to block down Patrick Horgan and you're jumping and trying to get it, and he's back off his back foot and he's still hitting it over the bar from 30 or 40 yards. You think you have him, but he still generates the power. I don't know how he does. It's just an unbelievable risk he has.
Yeah,
is brilliant
that,
player.
Is he,
you have to get the ball before him. You don't get the ball before Patrick Horgan, he's getting a shot away.
He reminds me a bit of Owen Kelly from Tip in that regard.
That the word coming out.
When he gets it in his hand, you're gone.
Yeah,
it's
definitely. He's unbelievable in fairness to him. And like, he told Nash to wait for that free as well. And he just puts his whole body behind it and still gets, like, to be able to put your whole belly behind it and get such accuracy as well, it's just, well, he's absolute class in fairness to him.
Yeah, and then he that one over from the sideline under the main stand on his left-hand side.
Yeah,
and
there
wasn't a point on there, was there?
No,
like,
there
he was actually being given space because it's
like... actually given out them for shooting from there. Like, you know what I mean? And then he goes over.
Unbelievable, right, but performance... Well,
I thought what was beautiful about that was half pretended for a second he was going to cross that ball across the field. And I think that's what bought him a little bit extra bit of time that... He didn't really show what first he was going to shoot. So
no.
The back didn't get right up on his shoulder. So a little kind of glance across the field and then without looking at the goal, just pops it over, which is deadly.
Unbelievable stuff. Right, winner of performance of the weekend has to go to Bubbles. 7 points from play. The bit of Harlem Globetrotters with the Noel McGrath point, the pass for John McGrath. Most players are going for a point there, right? Like, I mean, this was a bullet of a pass and wasn't really a goal on there. I'd say maybe the fact that he had been free for so long.
It was a great finish.
It was a brilliant finish, yeah. It was a brilliant finish. But he's an exceptional player. He's nonchalant, like out by the sideline, and he's just not... He missed a free and one from play in the second half. He went on to the frees.
Yeah.
I don't know why Callanan's not going on to the frees. But he's just an outstanding player. Like we said, we've probably talked about him enough already. Looking really fit. Mm. Centre forward's his position, because he can float around. He's not being tightly marked.
Yeah.
And if he is being tightly marked, he's taking one for the team anyways and he's pulling the centre back. So, like, I mean, it's a win-win to have him that fit. And again, like they said last night, it's not a fluke that Liam Sheedy has him that fit.
Yeah.
He has him that fit because this is Liam Sheedy. This is what Liam Sheedy does, right?
Yeah.
So he deserves a bit of credit.
Yeah, credit to Liam Sheedy, you have to say, from that perspective. Instead of just letting he's grabbed the ball by the horns, he's told him, you know, shape up, you need to. You're obviously good enough hurler, but you need to get yourself in shape. And even throughout the league, how he used them and utilised them, you know, he didn't start some of the earlier rounds. I seen him dive against Wexford in his first game of the league, and you know, he struggled for large parts of that game because he was only getting back fitness. But you know, Liam persisted with him, and I think, you know, it's very important even from a player's perspective, you know, that you have that confidence that, you know, the manager trusts what you're doing, once obviously you're being honest in everything that you're doing, and that, you know, over time it can only work then.
Yeah, okay, that's it. So that's it. Bubbles, congratulations. And we will be back. We're going to have to leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday and obviously loads more games to preview then. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.